Good morning, everyone. To welcome our guests from Honolulu, welcome. Wonderful to see you again. Talk this morning starts out about Cincinnati. We just returned, Sarika Adinala and I, from a nice July 4th weekend in Cincinnati. In fact, we got to watch the fireworks there from that were downtown from the Cincinnati Temple front steps for a few minutes. We've got the 4th of July as well. So they have a Hindu temple of Greater Cincinnati there, very diverse group with lots of deities. And the reason they invited us was they were moving the Murugan deity into a permanent location. They just completed building a south wing, and they had a permanent, what they call a permanent platform for the deity, and so they want us there for the installation ceremonies. So we got to go there starting Friday night with the traditional ceremony, the eye-opening ceremony. So for the eye-opening ceremony, the idea is the deity's eyes are opened, and so you show the deity everything auspicious. A little list of auspicious things. So it starts out with a virgin girl, a virgin boy, a married couple, an elderly couple, a young cow, and a swami. Supposed to have a swami there too. So one swami is supposed to be considered auspicious. So I got to be the swami. So when my turn came up, I got to go over and let Murugan watch me as the swami. And the cow happened to be a very small one, about this big. Made out of clay, you know. In Atlanta, they had a real cow, a young cow, and brought in an older cow, and, you know, this was a smaller ceremony. Smaller budget, so the cow was just a small one. So that was fun. And one of the priests there seems to know us very well. We're not quite sure of the history, but his name is Devanandan Shivacharya, and he was very happy and that we were there. And at that ceremony, he said, you know, that this deity happened to be gifted by Gurudeva many years ago. And he said, you know, everyone who worships this deity from now on will receive both the deity's blessings and Gurudeva's blessings too. That was his opinion. So that was a nice thought. So fortunately, the souvenir program documented the complete history of the Murugan deity. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known it all. And so their effort started back in 1994, so this is like a 10-year effort. They've been working on this for 10 years, quite slowly. So the small group there, it's a very diverse society from all parts of India, and this particular group are devotees of Murugan. And so they, 10 years ago, they went and saw Swami Satchidananda, who that time was nearby in his headquarters in Virginia. Yogadale in Virginia. So they told him they wanted to get a Murugan deity, and he said, go see Gurudeva. He's the Swami that will help you. So they contacted Gurudeva in 1995, in fact, they saw Gurudeva. They met both Gurudeva and Sayan Swami as they were returning. They stopped in the Cincinnati airport on their way back from Germany and met the group. And that inspired them further, and so Gurudeva asked, you know, which murti of Murugan do you want? And they chose the Pala Madhirsalai murti, along with two consorts, Baldi and Devayanai. And so Gurudeva ordered those murtis, and they arrived there in 1996. So they had the murtis for 8 years as a gift from Gurudeva. So fortunately, the souvenir told me all that. Because I hadn't remembered all the details Gurudeva has given murtis to so many temples that you know, we have to look it up in our master list. So a lot of the group, it was interesting, are from Sri Lanka. In fact, the coordinator of the group is from Malakam, which is a village near our Alabetti Ashram. It's just down the street, so to speak, Malakam, a few miles away. And he was just mentioning casually that when he was young, his father used to take him all the time to see our Gurudeva's guru, Yogaswami, in Kulukutarai, and he would go there as a young boy, and of course he said he was too young to really understand Yogaswami and what was going on, but he did mention that whenever they entered the yard, he would open the gate and go in with his father, that Yogaswami, who of course couldn't see the gate, would call out his father's name and ask him to come in. So he didn't know, Yogaswami knew who was ever in his yard just by their thoughts. He didn't have to see them. So that was a nice statement. And there was another lady who came and offered us dinner one night, and she was from Kulukutarai and recalls Gurudeva, meeting Gurudeva at the Olivetti Ashram, and being given some kind of pink fruit. That's all she can remember. Gurudeva gave her a pink fruit in Olivetti. So it made me realize, we wait another 20 years and all the stories from the elders from Sri Lanka will be about Gurudeva. How they met Gurudeva here and how they met Gurudeva there. It's going to change. Just give it more time. So on a Saturday we went to the temple in the late afternoon, and we had a nice homa and Kailasa Puja, and I gave a talk. We had about 140 people present, and we also met some families from Sri Lanka. For example, some of you know Amma Navaratnam, and her younger brother is called Tambi, and so we met Tambi's son and wife and two children who are now living in Ohio, all the way from Sri Lanka. He'll give another talk the next morning, about 200 people the next morning for the larger event. And give a talk on Lord Buddha being a real being, and then we got to attend certain cultural programs, and then we had a wonderful parade around the temple with the parade deities, which was a lot of fun, and met a few devotees there, including Joel and Linda and Mary Beth from our India Inner Search. They all came, said hello. So we got quite a few compliments on being there, and lots of people came forward and particularly thanked us for our talks. They were very appreciative of what we said in our talks, and even requested computer files. So they got the computer files of the talks so they could send them around to their group on email, as well as plan to print them in the newsletter. So that was nice that Gurudeva's teachings were so well received. So again, it was a similar group to our Western Canada trip, and a similar idea, that if we can get information on Gurudeva's guru, Yogaswami, to this group. While many of the elders there who know Yogaswami are still alive, it's to our advantage, and then they'll talk about Yogaswami from their experience and help Yogaswami, his teachings, and his attainments be better known among the entire group. So in that spirit, I looked around for some more Yogaswami stories and found a couple for this morning. So here's the first story. Sometimes when Swami stayed in our house, he would spend hours in deep meditation. Seeing Swami seated in the Padmasana lotus posture as the Lord in meditation on my return from work would enrapture me. Early morning when we wake up, seeing Swami lying on the bed, he would look like the Lord of Serenity. On seeing that form, I would sense that we were looking at God, thus proving the words given in that rare mantra, I am He. Even when Swami was not there, it was natural to recall His divine form in words. In the letter He wrote to me, there is a line, great souls have arrived from their experience. The plural word, great souls, generally signifies all those souls who have gained spiritual knowledge. As time went on, it appeared that Swami alone remained hidden in those plural words. Swami, by his own experience, gained the knowledge that we are the soul, Atma. It also became clear that Swami sees directly that God is within and without. I recollected that Swami once said, you can see God only through God. As I remember this, the certainty arose that there was no greater God than Swami, who is constantly seeing God everywhere, within and without. Just as a researcher who touches, feels, and tests a statue suddenly realizes the true form of that statue, which was worshipped earlier, would tremble like a devotee before the original God, such a tremor arose in me. In this state of mind, when I went to Jeff and I went to the ashram at Kulumbatarai to see Swami, Swami was seated amidst a few devotees. That day, even without my knowledge, I fell spontaneously at his feet and worshipped him. From that day onwards until he attained samadhi, whenever I went to see Swami, I worshipped him despite his saying these words, "It is not necessary to worship in front of people, and it is not necessary to fall on the ground. It is sufficient if you worship mentally." But from that day I could not be without falling prostrate and worshipping him. One day he called me by name and said, "What is the one thing God cannot do?" I heard this question and remained shocked. When it is said that God is all-powerful, is there something he cannot do? Swami quietly said, "You need not answer now. You can give the reply when you come in 2 days' time." When I came home, that question kept resounding itself. I could think of nothing else. While I was musing over that question, a section I had studied in the Mahabharata came to my mind. When Krishna asked, "What can be done to prevent the war?" Sahadevan's reply was the section I recall. Sahadevan's reply was, "If I bind you straight away, the war can be prevented." Then Krishna asked him, "How will you bind me?" And Sahadevan responded, he would bind him with the fetters of love. This seemed a satisfactory answer to Swami's question. I decided to tell Swami that when God is captured by the love of the devotee, he cannot free himself. 2 days later, when I went to see Swami, I gave this reply. When he heard my reply, Swami said, "How can that be? You can bind God by love, only if love is different from God. You cannot separate God from love. God is love." He continued, "The one act God cannot do is to separate himself from us, even for a moment." By this device, Swami impressed on my heart that God does not separate from us even for a thrice, and is always within us as the soul of our souls. Now since Swami is my God, I began to meditate on the fact Swami is the God who is inseparable from me. End of our story then. The same teaching from Yoga Swami is found in his published sayings and words of our Master, where it says, "There is one thing God cannot do. He cannot separate himself from the soul." Yoga Swami, of course, is impressing upon the mind the teaching that the essence of the soul is identical with God, that God is the soul of our soul, the life of our life. In the story, Yoga Swami could have simply made the statement to the devotee, "God is always within us." However, instead, he asked the question, "What is the one thing God cannot do?" and asked the man to think about it for 2 days. When the answer was finally given by Swami that the one thing that God cannot do is separate himself from us, it made a much deeper impression on the devotee's mind than it would have if simply spoken as a statement by Swami in the first place. So in this way, Yoga Swami impressed that teaching indelibly in the mind of this devotee. Gurudeva states the same teaching in the first sloka and bhasya of Dancing with Siva, where in answer to the question, "Who am I? Where did I come from?" he answers, sloka, "Rishis proclaim that we are not our body, mind or emotions. We are divine souls on a wondrous journey. We came from God, live in God, and are evolving into oneness with God. We are, in truth, the truth we seek." Bhasya. "We are immortal souls living and growing in the great school of earthly experience in which we have lived many lives. Vedic rishis have given us courage by uttering the simple truth, God is the life of our life." A great sage carried it further. You know who that is, right? Yogaswami. A great sage carried it further by saying, "There is one thing God cannot do. God cannot separate himself from us. This is because God is our life. God is the life in the birds. God is the life in the fish. God is the life in the animals. Becoming aware of this life energy in all that lives is becoming aware of God's loving presence within us. We are the undying consciousness and energy flowing through all things. Deep inside, we are perfect this very moment, and we have only to discover and live up to this perfection to be whole. Our energy and God's energy are the same, ever coming out of the void. We are beautiful children of God. Each day we should try to see the life energy in trees, birds, animals, and people. When we do, we are seeing God in action. The Vedas affirm, he who knows God as the life of life, the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, he indeed comprehends fully the cause of all causes. Second story. Ready for a second story? This is a great story. When Yogaswami began living in the Kulumbatarai ashram, he would spend the first 3 days of a week in meditation. He would rest on the fourth day. Again, he would spend the last 3 days in meditation. That's pretty strict, right? 6 out of 7 days in meditation, my goodness. Even after the devotees began to arrive in great numbers, he would be wrapped in meditation at will. On Shivaratri day, it was his custom to meditate through the night. A few devotees who had the good fortune to be with Swami at these times saw a light shine where Swami's body should have been. Those devotees who saw this shining light for a few seconds believed that this was a divine light that shone from his blemishless form and was his true form. Even those who could not see the shining light were amazed at the erect, still form of Swami seated like a statue without any movement. That golden form sat as still as his umbrella in the corner. On one occasion, when Swami sat like a pillar, a crow came flying, rested on his head for a while, and flew away. End of story. This same teaching from Yogaswami is found in his published sayings and words of our Master, where it says, if you think of the state of Siva, which is beyond all attributes, it won't come. It will come by itself. One day when I was in that state, a bird came and sat on my head. Even yogis and yanis can't understand that state. Om Namah Shivaya. Thank you.